Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland. Keith Wilson is running for mayor. Keith is a friend of mine that I connected with, I don't know what, Keith, a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago or something, through another mutual friend of ours. And I just remember we had a great telephone conversation about all your ideas about solving homelessness. And now here you are running for mayor.
Yeah.
So thank you for doing that, for serving our city.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. You know, I'll start by just saying back at you, thank you. You had invited me to give a presentation on ending unsheltered homelessness in Portland. And after the presentation, I was introduced to a woman. We talked about how and my plans of ending unsheltered homelessness. Well, that relationship worked out connecting me with another person who had an empty facility. And we took that empty facility, and 6 weeks ago, we opened up a day shelter. So I just want to start out by saying, you know, working together as a group of Portlanders, using the resources that are available, we can care and save for lives in Portland today. We just have to have the resources, the leadership. Don't focus on failed ideas, but new ideas, and bring those ideas forward to care for people. But let me just kind of begin with my purpose statement. I wanted to say thank you because that was a standout opportunity, and that's how how great ideas really begin to nurture and then become great programs. But
and
hey, everybody,
you did that, I just want to be clear though. You did that with no. It's not like you run some sort of city adjacent, county adjacent program or anything.
Nope. I have a nonprofit called Shelter Portland that I've built over this last 6 years.
Right.
Well, the goal is just as its namesake says, we're going to shelter Portland. We're going to end unsheltered homelessness. So it's very, very clear. You know, our mission is very clear, and that mission is all about action. So we've been opening up shelters or partnering with shelters to learn how do you do it rapidly at low cost to make it flexible so you can rapidly move it up with thousands of beds available, but then rapidly lower it as well to meet the needs of the community at that moment. It's very low cost, very flexible. So.
Is this your first, this isn't your first shelter, is it? The one you just talked about?
No, I've been partnering. So Shelter Portland creates funding, and then the day shelter is all Shelter Portland. But I've been partnering with United Gospel Mission and Church of Nazarene at a actual nighttime shelter at I-205 and Powell. And that was a shelter that just lost its funding as of March 31st. Because, you know, when it's January, we had 45 beds available and they were full. When it became March, and the county starts handing out tents as their resource for addressing the unsheltered, well, those individuals, when the weather became nice, started moving to tents because they didn't want to be sheltered for whatever reason. So our population at the shelter had actually gone down to 20. In fact, last year when we closed, we had only 15 people in life-saving shelter because that community was moving to the streets because that was their choice, if you will, because we had shelter up until the end of March 31st. So that is just kind of tell you the behavior that we're fostering in our community.
Why do you close it? I mean, wouldn't there be an argument for, look, if you can shelter one, can you leave it open?
Yes. If you can shelter one, the problem is that, you know, your budget is $23,000 a month.
Staff, and sure.
So if you don't have the headcount to support it, and, you know, homelessness funding's always pressure, but we didn't have the number of souls that we needed to support that funding. And that funding now went to a different avenue. So, and Union Gospel Mission is a great organization.
It is.
They were the ones funding the operating staff. Let me go back.
Please, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You've got some messaging that you wanted to convey, and I really appreciate that. Please, go ahead.
We are, you know, and the thing is about Kristen, your magic. It's such a great conversation about what do we need to do in Portland. But I want to start with just introducing myself. My name is Keith Wilson, and I'm a candidate for mayor of the city of Portland. My focus is to deliver real change for Portland. That's kind of my key message is real change. I deliver that by ending unsheltered homelessness in the first 12 months of my administration. We can't wait. So if you're going to look at half measures where people are going to say we're going to reduce it by 50% in the next 5 years, but that means there's still 50% of our population living and suffering on the street. We cannot do that. We must treat this as a humanitarian crisis, which it is. And then I always like to explain, what is unsheltered homelessness? A lot of people think that my goal is to end homelessness. Well, it's not to end homelessness. Certainly, that's the end game. That's what we want to do. But that's very, very difficult. And only a few communities in the United States have achieved that. My focus is to end unsheltered homelessness. That's the suffering that we're seeing on the street. The active camping, makeshift shelters, unregistered RVs, some cases not even operational with their world flowing out from that unit. You can just see the pain and suffering there. Or a ghost boat on the Willamette that we see more frequently than we've ever seen. And when you think about the unsanitary nature.
There's just an article about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's unsheltered.
How much garbage is in there? It's a super fun site.
That's right. That's right. I read that as well. Well, that sort of living conditions is not present in almost every city in the United States. No. There are a few cities, and Portland happens to be one of them. And we have the highest unsheltered homelessness rate in the nation, except for a few cities in California. So that's my key focus. And when you think about, well, that's driving so many associated costs and other programs that are really floundering in Portland. But I want to go on and just kind of give you a brief history of me. So, you know, you and I were just talking about, so what qualifies me to be the leader of Portland, to go through a new form of government, to implement vision, mission, culture? Why Keith Wilson? And so this past weekend was a great example. I introduced the first fleet of all-electric trucks in the Northwest this weekend.
You have a trucking company.
I have a truck. Yeah, thank you for framing it. It was Earth Day. And I purchase and own the first fleet of heavy-duty all-electric trucks in the Northwest. Not an easy endeavor.
I saw that on your Instagram. I'll link your Instagram in the show notes. It was really, it's so interesting what you're doing.
Yeah. So we have the lowest carbon footprint carrier in the nation, arguably. But when you think about a trucking company, how do you do that? Well, the vision's always been about outperforming the market as a whole. So we need a leader in Portland who has succeeded at a high level. And then I can go on and tell you a couple other things. So when you think about safety, Portland is in a public safety crisis. So let's translate it to my experience. So Titan, the company I own and operate, has the lowest workforce injury rate in the state of any carrier. So when you think about, we don't hire mediocre managers. We don't hire individuals that haven't been tried yet. So I've been tested for years and years and years working with my team. We have one of the lowest crash ratings in the nation as far as overall vehicular crashes. I use artificial intelligence. I use advanced technology in my fleet to help assist my drivers in safe driving behaviors. And that relates to being one of the best carriers with one of the highest safety rating carriers in the nation. Our Portland fleet uses not 1 gallon of petroleum diesel, fossil diesel. We either have replaced it with renewable diesel, which is 80% less emissions, or fully electric trucks. We've removed 84% of all fossil fuels in my 3-state operations. That's extraordinary. And those accomplishments, among many others, have allowed Titan, the company I operate, to be the National Innovator of the Year for the last 2 years. So I want you, Kristen, and the rest of the readers, like, well, does this guy have a history? Does he have a resume? Well, yes, we have a resume. Yes, I have degrees. You know, I often say more degrees than a thermometer. I just kid about that. But the point is you know, you have
What's
to be practiced.
What's your highest level of education attained?
A master's in business, but I have a certification in what's called Lean Six Sigma. It's a statistics systems improvement certification. So it's a high-level approach to addressing bottlenecks. In other words, reducing waste from business is a trained behavior. There are processes. It can be a business
right.
or case
That's
study.
Why people hire consultants,
That's
right?
exactly right. And now that you bring that up.
Something.
Yeah. And then as far as strategic planning, that's what I do every day. You know, as a CEO, my job is to focus on culture. How can I engage my staff to focus on quality, safety, and sustainability? Those are my core values. Now think about that. That's my DNA that I've been working on for decades. So I bring that to Portland in an overall system change with a new form of government. It's an exciting time because you want somebody who's not only been prepared, but you want somebody who's been practiced in that. And then just kind of a brief on my history. So I grew up in North Portland, you know, hard scrabble upbringing. We were poor. There was seven of us that lived in a 900 square foot, two bedroom home. Dad delivered luggage from the airport that was lost. Mom was an Avon lady. Great, great family. I mean, I had nothing but fond memories. It was hard. I mean, and then I'd always wanted to go to college. You know, I always snuck on to the University of Portland, and I would always go play basketball with the team. It was great. I mean, I was 8, 9, 10, 11. And when you were young, you had a bike. You know, the world was your oyster. And so I think I was excited by that. Got an education, finished at Oregon State, got on a plane, ended up working for NBC in Manhattan. Did that for 3 years, loved it. And then I took off for 2 years, and I traveled around the world to see all the great cities. Was getting ready to interview for a network television job in New Zealand. And I thought, you know what? Portland is the most beautiful city in the world. And I had been away for 8 years. And I thought, if I take this job in New Zealand with my passion, I'd end up being there. So I jumped on a plane. I came home and went to work for my father's business. It was a great opportunity. And that brings me to today. And then about 6 years ago, through the success of my business, I started looking around at our city, Kristen, and I literally don't recognize it anymore. So the city I came back to in the 90s is not the city that we have today. And it's all self-inflicted. In the 80s and 90s, Mayor Clark and Commissioner Lindbergh ended unsheltered homelessness. They're, in fact, Commissioner Lindbergh's on my Shelter Portland Leadership Council. And I look at all the successive leaders until today and the failed leadership and the failed policies, and we keep trying to do the same things over and over and over again, and the outcomes aren't different because we're not being creative. So it's time for an outsider. It's time for a proven leader. It's time for an innovator with new ideas to come into our city and do a reset. And I'm not talking about law and order. I'm not talking about arresting people. It's just recognizing best practices that are around the world of how communities care for their communities. Because Portland's an outlier. You go to other cities, you go to Boston or Boise or Philadelphia, you're not going to see encampments or the public safety issues or emergencies that you're seeing in Portland. It is Portland-centric, and so I have a plan to help us move out of that.
Yeah, talk about that.
Okay. As I sip my coffee. All right. So on day one, well, let's talk about the day after the election. So on November 5th, I'm hopeful that everybody's listening is going to vote for Keith Wilson for mayor. Right, that's first and foremost. That next day, my crisis team kicks in. So I have 10 national leaders in the homelessness environment. President Obama's assistant secretary to reduce homelessness is on my team. I just mentioned Mike Lindbergh, who is our commissioner. I have the mayor of Boise, who ended unsheltered homelessness, on my team, and seven other leaders, including representatives in our state legislature, because I need that really grass-top approach, those leaders who are helping me with the plan. And then I have five executive directors from homeless service providers in our city. We're working constantly once a month on the budget. What's it going to take? I'm going to kick in that crisis team on November 6th. There's no celebrating on November 5th. We've won the race. We now kick in our crisis team. We spend that next 60 days in that sort of honeymoon period to get ready for January 1st. And that first week is we present to our city councilors, our 12 new city councilors, we are going to declare a public safety emergency. We have 4,000 people living on our streets, and 400 of them are going to die. We know that. And we all know somebody on the street. They are not nameless, faceless figures. We need to act, and act quick. That next 90 days is I'll be working with our city council to create an interim budget action to activate our NET teams, which is our emergency preparedness earthquake teams. We're going to then ramp up a system where we set up nighttime walk-in emergency shelters at a number we need for the community members on the street. And it could be 2,000 or 3,000, but it's taking repurposed churches, community centers, city assets that are empty at night, right? Because most assets are empty at night. I've been setting up shelters.
I mean, it seems like a lot of assets are empty anyway, unfortunately.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. You know, that. Let me talk. That's my first focus, my second and third. So second's public safety, restoring public safety. And third is to restore and revitalize our community. Our business climate is just getting hammered with negative outcomes. And that's going to address the taxes to then fund our city. So let me go back to how do you end unsheltered homelessness? And then we'll start this conversation. So the last 6 years, I've been opening shelters. I've been sleeping in shelters. I've been testing different shelters. I've been using parking garages as shelters.
Yeah, I think that's important. You actually slept in the shelters.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it's like the Gateway Parking Garage, the TriMet Gateway Parking Garage, I used as a test shelter. I worked with TriMet, their senior leadership, because their ridership numbers are plummeting.
Yes.
People don't feel safe on TriMet. Right. I mean, either you're being accosted. We hear about the murders on it. We hear about the drug use on it.
All the fentanyl residue.
Yeah. But Kristen, I'll also go back to the failed leadership in our community. You know, when we had our severe winter shelter this past January, it was 15 degrees out. And when they closed them, you know, as a result, they handed out TriMet tickets to go ride the bus as a warming shelter. And I'm thinking,
I didn't know that. What
have we become when
the
a warming?
Did this?
Yeah, why are we doing that? And it's still being used today, whether it's a cooling shelter or a warming shelter.
That's for sure.
Right. So it shows you we have a real lack of resources for caring people. And so all I'm going to do is taking all that experience of opening and operating shelters, and we're going to scale it up on day one. But it's a financial aspect as well. So I was able to get the shelters that I partner with, the nighttime emergency shelters that are only open at night, down to $15.55 per person per night. If you compare that to Safe Rest Village or a temporary alternative shelter site, $189 if it's paid by the city. I'm sheltering
per night.
Per night. So essentially, I've got the per night cost to care for them, to save somebody through the night, to save a woman who might be in a tent from being harmed or raped or whatever
or
the
like
horrific
things.
Or like
the woman who gave birth in a tent.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
The other night. Oh, yeah. Sharon Myron was talking about it.
It does not surprise me, Kristen. We're so upside down. But I can shelter the community at 8%, and we can rapidly set it up. It's what happens in other cities in an earthquake or an emergency. I spent a lot of time down in New Orleans after Katrina learning from Mayor Landrieu, New Orleans mayor, or in Gulf Coast, which is Mississippi, learning how did they shelter, you know, 60,000 people after losing 50,000 homes in one night.
Isn't it amazing when we think we're so progressive and we're taking lessons from Mississippi? I mean, we have to take lessons from somebody.
Yeah.
Because what we're doing isn't working.
I will tell you, you know, I'm a progressive Democrat, but I tell you, there is nothing progressive about Portland when you let somebody live and die
not.
On the street. Yeah. It makes
it's hands
absolutely
off.
No.
It's right wing, really. It's no government intervention.
And, you know, caring for people is low cost. So let's move to the second phase of that 12. So because we will have ended unsheltered homelessness, the goal is by April 1st to have all of those units ready to go. Notify the community for 60 days that camping is ending. If you've got an unregistered RV, because I'm able to have a shelter now, I can enforce my no camping laws.
Right.
I can enforce my
regardless
sanitation
of
laws.
Regardless of what happens with the Supreme Court decision. Oh, exactly.
Yeah. The Supreme Court is just, that's a half measure. I mean, that's just saying, okay, if I have an extra shelter bed, a police officer can direct you to it. Great. In fact, I was talking to Mayor Beter in Boise, and he's like, yes, it should change because it's too restrictive a law. But let's get this, let's be clear. It's not going to end unsheltered homelessness on our streets. We might be able to give a resource to an officer.
No, we still need a plan.
You still need a plan. Exactly. So regardless of what happens in the Supreme Court. But
I just think the city uses that a lot as an excuse.
Every city uses it, Kristen. I am surprised. So I met with Mayor Beter, and I said, you know, they use your case where you're the appellate. And he says, yeah, Keith, you know, it's like, may I tell you a story about how he ended unsheltered homelessness?
Please.
Let me. All right. So Martin versus Boise states that you must have a number of shelter beds that matches the number of your unsheltered in total before you can enforce your no camping laws.
And I'm sorry, I want you to keep going, but I guess I should interject and correct myself for a second or just clarify something. The Boise decision is not what's in front of the Supreme Court. That's the Grants Pass decision, which is different. But the city does use both, I believe. This city does as an excuse for not doing anything about homelessness. I'm sorry, keep going, Keith.
No, great. Great point of clarification. So the Grants Pass versus Johnson is being adjudicated before the Supreme Court using Martin versus Boise as the precedent. So they are addressing Grants Pass versus Johnson, but the precedent is Martin versus Boise. So it does tie back to the Boise mayor.
Seems like everything does.
Yeah, so Kristen, in 2018, Mayor Beter of Boise lost the case. Martin versus Boise, he lost the case before the Supreme Court chose not to hear it. So
that was the Ninth Circuit.
Yep. So the Ninth Circuit judgment was upheld. And that was what we spoke about, a moment ago. So no sooner did he lose the case did Mayor Beter have 120 tents next to City Hall. So he called in his fire, his police department, his homeless service providers, EMTs, had them around his conference table, and he said, ladies and gentlemen, what is going on? Why do we have all these tents next to my office? And they said, well, Mr. Mayor, we lost that case. Just like, and that, you know, let's back up for a second. And we hear that all the time. Well, Martin versus Boise says we can't do this or that. So he turned to them and he was very clear. Great leadership in the time of crisis. Let's just go back. It takes great leadership that's practiced with clear values in the face of a crisis to help care for a community, which we're not getting here in Portland. That is the absolute high level conversation point that you and I are having. Back to the conference table. He turned to his group around the conference. He says, we are a caring community. We don't let people camp because it's uncaring. Yeah. He says, you have 30 days to provide outreach to every single one of those souls. I want to know their names. I want to know their circumstances. And I want you to notify them at day zero, we're going to have enough shelter beds. And he turned his homeless service providers and he said, you need mats, extra beds. I don't care what it takes. Overflow, you're going to care for this community. And so sure enough, from day 30 to day 20 to day 10, they did the countdown. Got to day zero and they broke the encampment. And he says, here's what happened, Keith. 40 of those 120 just in the encampment went back home recently. They went back to Cheyenne, Salt Lake City, to Portland. Because we were allowing that behavior. He said 40 went back locally.
Open air drug markets and things advertise themselves.
Yeah.
It's international spectacle really at this point.
No doubt. He said 40 of them went back home locally because when you provided that encampment, you brought people out from the house, whether they were couch surfing, they didn't want to be with their parents, or the dealers were on the street, and so the addict wanted to be on the street. Whatever it is, you know, there are a host of different reasons. It's not a monolith. Every person has a different need.
Sure.
But he said of the 120 souls, he provided 40 beds, so a third. And so he said he was completely wrong. He said, here's what I thought. I thought by providing the shelter, I was going to be creating a magnet of people coming to my city.
No.
And he said, but this was an epiphany he had. And he says, Keith, here's what happened. He said, I realize now, by not applying my laws and allowing camping, I created an inflow of flux. He said, so my lesson was you just simply apply your basic codes, your sanitation laws, your community standards of no camping or sanitation or unregistered vehicles. You apply those laws, and he says, and you don't allow camping. And he says, then you care for your community, and you're not going to have that inflow of population. Now apply that to Portland. So we have 4,000 people. I'm going to set up however many beds I need overnight. For that next 60 days, I know we're not going to have 4,000 takers. I know that because I go out with officers all the time. We have people arriving from Florida with registered 2012 RVs that by law we're supposed to be impounding. But because we don't have shelter, because of the excuse is Martin versus Boise, we have to have shelter. And we consider the RV that's not registered or licensed a primary residence.
Well, you talked about this before we went on air. You said you do ride-alongs with, like, Bike Squad from Portland Police Bureau, the fire department, or Portland Street Response. Yep. What?
I mean, and
frequently,
street cleaners,
once a month?
Well, at least once a month. So I went out with our street cleaners.
Just
about
amazing.
If you're going to run a city, you don't run it from my office. You run
That's
it with
exactly
boots on the
right.
ground. And I always, you know, it's like in my business, my poor staff, I'm all about anecdotes. And I always say the best fertilizer for a farmer's field are their boots. You got to go out and see what's happening.
Yes.
You can't run a city. And so
Jessie Burke talks about that. When she came in here, she said, when people, elected officials or people who are running for office come to visit me at the Society Hotel in Old Town Chinatown, she said, we hold our meetings outside. I tell them, it's a beautiful hotel. It's
Absolutely.
Very nice. I'm happy to bring you inside and get you a coffee. But the entire meeting's taking place outside because I need you to see
Absolutely.
What I see every day.
You
and,
know,
and they're not out there.
Yeah. Do you know when I sleep in a shelter, I never sleep just on my own or whatever. I always have a homeless friend with me because then I'm just peppering him with questions because that's how you learn. So here's a great story. So I did a shelter test at a church. We moved the pews back at night. I had some shelter friends with me there. And I had blow-up mattresses. My friend in Brisbane, Australia.
They're so uncomfortable.
Well, check this out. Here was the epiphany. My friend.
That just shows my age, probably.
No. You would think. So here's just a simple lesson of don't make decisions yourself. Let people who are actually in the jobs or the managers, or they make the decisions. You're simply somebody who's implementing their decision. That's a great decision. And even if it's half-baked, if it's somebody else's decision you're implementing, they will make it work. when you tell people that you're going to go do this and they don't want to do it, they will find a way to not make it work. So you reverse that. Anybody with boots on the ground, you listen, you make sure it's vetted, that it's been researched, and you implement it. And if you do it and use their ideas, it's amazing the sort of success you'll have, right? So let me go back to Australia. So Norm McGilvery was a nominee for Australian of the Year. Super good guy. So he was taking car parks or parking garages and turning them into shelters. Super warm in Australia, right? And he would use blow-up mattresses. Well, I've been befriending people from around the world trying to find the best practices. And so I tried it at our shelter, and I used a blow-up mattress at it. It was great. It worked great. And I went to another shelter and used it. Yeah, it worked great because you're on concrete. So then it failed because I tried to do it in the coldest day of the year, and I almost killed 8 volunteers at a shelter I opened up in parking garage. It's all good. I learned we can't do it in Portland. It's cold here versus Brisbane, Australia. So I failed. That's a great leader. You try something, you fail fast, you improve.
And you acknowledge it.
Absolutely.
When you fail, you acknowledge
you pivot.
It. You don't just
pivot,
put your head
pivot.
Down and keep doing what just failed.
No. In systems improvement, the word pivot is used often. In systems improvement, you want to get to know. You want to get to problems. You want something to fail because you found a lesson.
Yeah.
And it's called pivot.
And you don't want to gaslight your constituents.
No,
everybody
exactly.
around you knows what happened.
No,
you
great
might as well just talk about it.
Yeah, and great decisions are always backed up with thousands of failures.
Yeah,
so
and
you
it
gotta
makes you
love
more
it.
Credible.
I will tell you, I think people appreciate failures. So
they do.
You come forward, acknowledge it. I screwed up. Now
we
here's
do.
We're going to fix
people
it.
People love it.
Yeah.
They love hearing that because we can all relate to
our
failure.
Our leaders never do that.
Right.
They
right.
overspend. They over-resource. They overthink
and then they
delay.
Successful. Yes, they tell you how successful they are.
Right. And we see that and we're experiencing that in Portland. But I tell you, that's not elsewhere. It certainly isn't with Mayor Beter in Boise. He cared for his community. He ended unsheltered homes. He was clear about Mayor Landreau after Katrina. You know, I love this story. He said, I'm going to get back to Australia.
Please.
Forgive me, audience.
No.
We're kind of.
Tell us.
But Mayor Landreau was the mayor of New Orleans. He's now the. He now is in the administration with President Biden, and the infrastructure czar. Super good guy. We had 250,000 people unsheltered overnight, and he slowly started improving and reducing it because FEMA was there. But when FEMA left 3 years later, his unsheltered rate skyrocketed because everybody was living in a FEMA unit or whatever. So, you know, they were there for 3 years, and it skyrocketed. So he brought all of his homeless service providers together, and he said, okay, here's our objective. We need 10,000 shelters at this particular time. And well, Mr. Mayor, we're going to have a really difficult time doing that. He says, well, let's work on it. And he got down and he worked with them. And he got it down to where they were going to provide that 10,000 beds within a year. And then he turned to them. He said, okay, can we do it? And they all said, yes, Mr. Mayor, we can do it. Okay, now you got 6 months. You see, he was explaining you're going to complete this now in 6 months. He said he got them to believe they could do it in 12 months. But then he turned to them. He says, it's not good enough. We have to do this quickly. So accelerate everything that you decided that you got to yes on. Now do it. It was just great leadership.
I love that. Make it a real emergency.
But then they achieved it.
Yes.
Because he got them to believe. First of all, it was all no's. He got them to do the numbers, to do the research, to work on the overall plan together, right? All the homeless service provider. He even had a vet-owned building that he got to provide shelter to 1,000
veteran
vets.
Or veterinarian?
Veteran.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. A veteran. He
I
had
have
a
pet. So yeah, I just it was think a vet.
Yeah, no worries. So I mean, it was a private-public partnership. He didn't do it just on his own.
Right.
He didn't do it just with city money. He got the community together, and this one
and
vet.
Veterans are such a neglected population.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great story about resource management.
It is.
It's not about trying to do everything with just funding and money and politics. It's about getting out in the community. Now I'm going to go back to Australia. So
yeah,
forgive
please.
Me, listeners. So here's what happened. So Norm would use blow-up mattresses in his parking garages. So I started doing it here. Well, that failed. You know, 15 degrees. I had volunteers out at the Metro parking garage. It didn't work. It's all good. So I said, well, what if we move it inside to like a church? My buddy was a pastor at the Church of Nazarene. I said, Matt, can I borrow your church? I want to move the pews back. It's empty at night. You don't have anything going on, right? I'm going to bring in some homeless souls and we're going to test it. Sure enough, we moved back the pews. We stayed the night there. We blew up these mattresses and I'm interviewing. And Matt Huff is one of my friends. He's homeless. I said, Matt, isn't this great? We got these, you know, we're warm, we're sheltered, we have a roof, We have a big blow up mattress. And he looks at me. He's like, no, Keith, this is terrible. I said, Matt, what are you talking about? He says, I'm used to sleeping outside. I'm not going to be comfortable on this blow up mattress at all. A mat would be better. So my perception was give him a really luxurious bed to try and draw him in from outside. And he said, no, it's too plush. I'm used to sleeping on the ground. Now, that was me thinking somebody needs a comfortable bed. And he said, no, I need just the basics. So if you don't listen and talk and experience yourself, you think that the mat is inhumane. Actually, in my shelters, all I use are mats, 3-inch mats. And so you learn that your perceptions aren't always true and correct. You go talk to the individuals that are experiencing this. You listen to them. And then your programs and processes won't be much more improved. So that's essentially how we set up our shelters at night. It's just mats. We bring them in. We tuck them off in the side. The church goes back to its normal operations. We're talking with community centers now. So I've got a list of like 10 different resources who want to help. So on day one, when I talk about January 1st being mayor, there's not a whole lot of new that's going in. It's already planned. I have a board meeting with my Shelter Portland group tomorrow to work on the details of actual cost because their executive directors at Homeless Service Providers, they're vetting our numbers now. We're getting ready to go. We know how much budget we need, and it's very little when you think about the totality of what all of us are experiencing here in Portland. It's just, it's horrendous.
Well, that's a great word for it. Tell us a little bit about what you understand about addiction, because it seems to me that we have it doesn't seem to me that as you like data, which I like that about you. I like data too.
Yep.
And based on the numbers, we have some of the highest, if not the highest, rates of addiction in the country, in Oregon, in Portland in particular. And we have some of the lowest, if not the lowest, treatment facilities available.
That's
and by
right.
that I don't mean like the straws and the foil that the county's passing out with the tents, but really, you know, rehab, detox, and not just that, peer-to-peer support. I mean, it's a continuum of care, and I think harm reduction is somewhere on that continuum of care. But also, if somebody wants to go into detox, I mean, the people who work at these places, or into rehab, the people who work at these places can say, you know, we're turning away so many people every day, and it's just tragic that we don't, it seems to me that it's just tragic that we don't have that infrastructure. And I know that's more of a county issue, but what, if anything, can you do to move that along as mayor?
Mm-hmm. So that's a systems problem. So unfortunately, your listeners are going to have to follow me through on the data. So
please,
just understand the data. So let's talk about treatment, because yes, of those 4,000 souls on the street, a lot of them are going to have either behavior health issues.
Yes.
It could be addiction, financial.
Mental illness.
Lost housing. A host. There are 4,000 people out there, and I say that there are 4,000 reasons why they're out there. So I try not
sure.
to go down a particular one rabbit hole as a single. It's so many. So first of all, let's talk about addiction. So here's the high-level knowledge. Every person who's addicted generally will have a 75% chance of reaching full recovery, where they'll enjoy a healthy and long life. That's just the number.
I've seen that data point too, but and we talked about that off air, but it does occur to me that it's possible that those are pre-fentanyl numbers. Do you know if those are post-fentanyl numbers?
You know, I don't know.
Because I think fentanyl is uniquely difficult to get off of.
It's a number I've known for the last few years. But that's kind of, and keep in mind, that's very hopeful because as a whole, we can overcome addiction.
Well, and that assumes they get into the treatment, right?
Yeah, and that's
and also, I guess we should talk about the data point that most people don't, and this may be pre-fentanyl too. I don't know that you want to go ahead and try fentanyl and assume you're not going to get addicted, but in general, at least pre-fentanyl era, most people just don't get addicted. It's just like alcohol or anything else, marijuana, I suppose, anything else. Most people who use substances actually don't get addicted. So we're talking about a small subset of that population, and then it's a smaller subset that can't seem to get off of substances on their own.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Alcoholism is still the largest addictive
issue.
Substance out there.
And I think my understanding is it causes the most harm and havoc.
Yeah, it's still America's largest root cause of addiction is alcohol. So fentanyl,
it's in our culture.
It has all of the front page Exactly. It's our culture. Yeah. Fentanyl is definitely front page right now because even the smallest amount could kill our child.
Right.
You know, alcohol takes a long time.
I mean, fentanyl is all harm.
That's right. Yeah. But that was the first. So knowing that top line data is that, okay, our job is to help those recover.
Right.
To facilitate that, whether through accountability, interdiction, or whatever it is, to try and help. Keep in mind that that's that critical point. The point you said regarding treatment or the lack of treatment or the addictive rate of our community in Oregon, yes, we're like number one.
Yeah.
All right. And then when you think about
prior to 110 even.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's why a lot of us, including my stupid self, voted for 110 because we were really just hoping for some infrastructure.
I appreciated 110. In fact, I spent a week in June in Portugal with the leaders.
Oh, did you go on that?
No, I did it on my own.
How interesting.
I spent a week with their addiction services government officials.
João Goulão, is that one of the people you met with?
I spent a full day with João Goulão, who he wrote the decriminalization law for Portugal.
Right, and he's the doctor who built out all that infrastructure, unlike us, before the decriminalization.
You know, the cohort that went over there after I went there, and I was helping kind of set up some of the places for that cohort to go, I asked him individually. He and I had an individual all-day meeting, and then I spent a week with his shelters and all of that. But I compared our program with his program because as mayor, I had to know how are we going to address 110, measure 110, right? I had to get ready for January 1st. So I had to understand how they did it. But I compared our system with their system, and he just looks at me. He's like, Keith, you can't do that. You know, that makes no sense. You can't have a 1% effective rate where when you give a person a citation, only one out of 100 citations goes to the full extent of somebody getting a drug assessment. But the point is moot now because our legislature changed the law. So it's really good. And that goes into effect on November 1st. But going back, so treatment, yeah, you're right. But I want to go back to our overwhelmed system. So it all ties back to unsheltered homelessness, Kristen. We have to address that first. So 35% of everybody in our county are what's called homeless upon arrival. It's inflow.
Yes, that's all in the point in time count, which I think everybody even says is must be conservative because we all assume it's unreliable. It's self-reporting. Yeah.
So keep in mind, one third. Now, remember, we have an overwhelmed treatment system. Yet when you look at Oregon, or I should say Multnomah County, a third of everybody in our county are homeless upon arrival. In other words, they were addicted or homeless in Austin or Miami or Phoenix, a third. And this is just an important time count. So this is not my opinion anecdotally or anything. It is absolute data. It's called, it's in the migration section of the 2023 point in time count. So a third. So now we have an overwhelmed treatment system, but yet a third of the individuals are coming into the county, not from our county. So you see how we're getting ourselves overwhelmed? Because we're allowing encampments or tents. I mean, our county actively hands out tents.
I know.
The last expense, I think we handed out 11,000 tents a couple of years. The last data that I got.
We learned it all from the Americans with Disabilities Act lawsuit. It was part of the discovery.
Yeah. So you see, we're fostering that behavior. So now we're overwhelmed with treatment, and we're actually actively allowing encampments. We're letting people that are addicted live next to dealers in the next tent. Makes no sense whatsoever. And then what you have is, of all of those inflows, you have a public safety emergency. So the first thing I need to do is end unsheltered homelessness. The second is to restore public safety. So understanding the numbers and understanding why our addiction and our treatment system is overwhelmed, when you have 35% of everybody on the street not from our community or homeless upon arrival, with 21% of those from out of state, we're a magnet. So we have the largest inflow of any community that I've found in the United States. So now we reverse that by just simply caring for our community. Remember, we're going to end unsheltered homelessness early on in my administration within the first year. That's immediately going to help us restore public safety. And the way we do that is you look at the arrest numbers. So we generally arrest about 10,000 people per year. This is through Portland Police. And when you look at those numbers and you break that down, half of the people we arrest are unsheltered.
Yeah, oh, I know.
So now, here's
I
the
mean,
other.
Look around.
Absolutely. So we're constantly arresting the same people over and over and over again.
Eli talked about it when he came on.
Yeah. And when you look at the overall population of our unsheltered, it's only 1% of our total population.
I know.
So look at that. 1% of our population is consuming 50% of our police force resources. And then we release them soon thereafter. Yes. And I'll tell you anecdotally, I went out with police officers, I think the neighborhood response teams, AJ and
people forget that we have these. We do. We have these. They're called NRTs, neighborhood response teams, just like Keith said. So every neighborhood has one, and it's dependent upon your precinct. So if you're central precinct, you know, it's a rough going, because you've got, what, like 43 square miles or something, and it's a tight team. So we're talking like West Hills all the way to Cesar Chavez is their jurisdiction. And that's a lot of ground for the neighborhood resource team to cover.
Yeah. So I went out with CJ and Amelia, and we arrested one guy, and we were talking to him. He had been arrested 9 times in 3 months. Now, every time you arrest that person, you're taking the resource away from somebody who's housed. Now, I want everybody to keep this framed. We're talking about treatment, and I'm going to end up there. So,
what do you mean taking a resource away?
So 10 years ago, Kristen, a response time in your worst time of need.
Oh, sure.
A priority.
Yes.
It was 6 minutes.
I mean, that's what I was just thinking about. I was thinking, I'm near Cesar Chavez. If I have an issue and they're in the West Hills dealing with domestic violence or something, I'm in big trouble. Or if they're downtown, where they're probably going to be, right near here, where we're sitting, or if they're in Chinatown or something.
Yeah, it's a numbers game. So if you're arresting half of your arrests are the unsheltered, so remember, that's going away under my administration. But it
right. So, it'll, so years, you're saying it'll free these
that's ex-
so resources it's, up, it'll free up police.
That's right. And I'm going to get back to the drug treatment and the lack of treatment that you talked about. And that's where our question started. I'm going to frame you and get back there. But a decade ago, a priority call in your worst moment of need when you and your husband or anybody was 6 minutes. Today, it's 24 minutes.
Oh, at
least. 4 times. Well, that's the numbers on the Portland police response times. So now let's think about that. So that's how we restore public safety. We're going to end unsheltered homelessness full stop by simply caring for those in the nighttime. Now, you know that a third of those individuals from around, a third of our unsheltered are homeless upon arrival. They're here because we're providing that opportunity to be in a tent. As soon as you end unsheltered homelessness, that person now is going to have to realization. Do I want to come into a shelter and start joining the community? Do I want to start a works program, a drug treatment? You and I both know, and Mayor Beter has really told us this, that a third are going to go away. They're going to go back to their communities, their homes, their friends, whatever the case may be. And a third are probably going to go back home locally because they're not going to have the resource of being in a tent on our street anymore. So a third are going to come into our shelter. Our police aren't going to be overwhelmed. So think about it, Kristen. Our drug treatment that's upside down right now, if we can reduce the overall pressure of the headcount, we're able to right-size that treatment
totally
system
sense.
To provide better treatment. I mean, somebody shows up at Hooper Detox.
Oh, I know.
And they want to go through that very difficult withdrawal program, and then they're released to homelessness.
Right.
Have you heard of anything more inhumane? And when you think about Bybee Lakes.
And that's if they're admitted to the program.
And Bybee Lakes has 143 unfunded beds in recovery available right now, and we choose not to fund. Well, you can bet in January we're going to get that funded.
Thank you. And I want to point out that Alan Evans, who runs Bybee Lakes, he will help people. I mean, I know he does because they've come in here like Patrick Burnite. Patrick now works at Bybee Lakes, and that's a great episode. If anybody wants to go back and listen to it, he was on with Andrea Suarez from We Heart Seattle, and that's where she found him. And she brought him down here because Bybee was willing to help Patrick, and Bybee will get you into treatment. They will help you get drug treatment. So this idea that, oh, they're high barrier and we can't fund them, well, they'll take you where you are, and then the question will be, hey, if you want to join our, just like you said, Keith, yes, there are conditions. I mean, if you want to join our community, we will help you get the resources, whatever you need. Let's triage. Like, is it mental health? Is it drug addiction treatment? And let's get you that, and then let's get you integrated. And
That's
then
right.
eventually you know, if you're somebody like Patrick, you end up working there.
Yeah, and because work is that dopamine replacement. It's self-actualization.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's really...
I didn't think about that.
At my day shelter, I partner with Work Systems. They provide thousands of dollars to me, and I bring somebody in who's unsheltered, and I offer them 1 hour's worth of work to go around our community and do cleanup. We pay them cash at that moment. It's dopamine replaced. We're trying to change their behavior and help them re-engage. I mean, it's smart money.
Positive
reinforcement, mm-hmm. right. I mean, makes sense. But to go back to that point regarding the treatment system, now you don't have a treatment system that's overwhelmed. And the Hooper detox, so do you know we're releasing them? And what are they going to go back to, a low-barrier shelter where fentanyl is actively being sold and or used? I mean, what sort of cruelty is that to somebody who's actively asking for help for withdrawal? You know, my shelters, I have two types, low berry and medium berry. My medium berry shelter closes at 11 p.m. because I want people to get quiet sleep, safe sleep.
What does medium mean?
It means that we're closing the door, and if you're actively in your fentanyl crisis and you leave after 11, you're not getting back in.
Got it, okay.
Low barrier is, it's more chaotic. There's behavioral health issues, but you can come and go at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. That's low barrier, and that's all of our shelters in Portland, right? That's
and
all we have.
And how do you keep that low barrier one going? Because, of course, Multnomah County opened up the behavioral, quote-unquote, behavioral health center. They had to shut it down because everything was so out of control there.
Yeah.
And their argument was, we just can't staff it. We don't have... I mean, they had issues with their staff. It was all detailed in the article. But, I mean, their argument was we can't handle this population. So what have you learned that enables you to handle a low-barrier population?
Well, you have to be all-welcoming for it. But you also have to be and staff it appropriately. So the shelter that I have at Shelter Portland, you know, our focus is basic nighttime emergency shelter, so nobody dies at night. You always have a warm bed to sleep in. It's not a behavioral health link. That really is provided during the day shelters where we're going to find and help you overcome whatever your barrier is. So the behavioral health center is really designed as a drop-off for somebody in active crisis. A basic nighttime shelter isn't for that, but there will be people who will be suffering from bipolar and schizophrenia.
Oh, I see. Like, literally, they were picked up in the middle of a crisis, and they were dropped off.
Sometimes. That's Unity.
I thought it was walk-in.
It's not even walk-in anymore, Kristen. You got to go over to
the behavioral health center?
No, they took away the walk-in because of they caught it. Yeah. You can't even walk in. You have to have a ticket to gain entry now through another shelter. You have to have a referral to go into it. So it's based on what its overall mission was originally, has been scoped and changed completely. So it's changed a lot. So I want to kind of circle back. Mm-hmm. What we were talking about is how do we take the pressure off of our treatment system? It starts with ending unsheltered homelessness. You've got to right-size your community and care, basic care first, and stop the inflow into Portland from other communities and start caring for our community members that are here. And if you came in from outside of our community and you want to join our community, we welcome you because we've got jobs. I mean, we need jobs, but you're not going to have the resource of being in a tent anymore and communicating to those from around the nation that may be looking for that. So our community standards are on the books, right? There mm-hmm. is no camping by law. You know,
we'll have less people coming in.
Right. Well, you can't be in a tent because it's against the law.
Right.
Because I'm providing basic
nighttime
shelter. And
what does against the law mean to you?
You can't have a tent, a makeshift shelter, an RV.
What is the consequence?
So an officer, this is where I've been traveling around the world. In Gulfport, they were having that same difficulties. So they asked these three things. When someone's starting to set up a tent in Biloxi or Pascagoula or in downtown New Orleans, right, on Bourbon Street.
Oh, I can't imagine. They probably don't even get started.
That's exactly right, Kristen. The officers say three things, and this is a refrain. They said, I want to help you, so they immediately try and build trust, right? It's not accusatory. I want to help you. What does that look like for you? Because the officer now has resources, and we'll talk about Eli and the bike ride I took last week with him. He has no resources. But the officer says, what does that look like for you, but you can't stay here? Because that's the law. You can't set up a tent.
What about the criticism that police officers shouldn't be doing any of that?
Well, they have to. They are our public safety service.
I agree with you, but it's a familiar refrain in the city.
Well, Kristen, I would hope all of us would. If we see somebody setting up a tent on the corner of our street, I hope we would all walk up and say, hey, we have a resource. We have nighttime emergency shelters for you at night. You don't have to do that. Portland's a caring city.
This.
You would know that because we're going to need 10 to 15 of these. Second of all, I have day shelters. The day shelters are full service centers that are going to help the housed and the unhoused. So let's say you're on the verge of losing your house. You're going to get evicted. You need a resource still. You go to a day shelter, and we're going to connect you with the resources from the county. Right now, you know, if you are struggling on the corner right now at at noon, officers don't even know where to send you. We could send you to a day shelter to connect you with services if you're in active PTSD or domestic violence to try and help you overcome that and then start linking you with services.
Right, and you have this experience when you did a ride along with Eli Arnold, who's running for city council, that this was in his capacity as a Portland police officer on Bike Squad. And you said you were doing a, we were talking off air, you said you did a ride along with him and you just didn't have resources for people.
Last week. So two events. So we ride downtown. There's a guy who's homeless. He actually has a fire on the sidewalk. I mean, he has a fire.
Oh,
I mean,
we see that
what
every day.
Have we become in Portland? What sort of chaos?
Fires.
I mean, I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. So the downtown clean and safe gentlemen are there. We pull up on our bikes. Eli goes to help. Pardon me, Officer Arnold, wonderful person on the Portland Police Force and on the bike squad. He says, hey, I want to help you. You can't have that. We got to move. You're up against the business. This is affecting the shopkeeper's viability. What do you do? And Eli says, well, can I help you or refer you to a shelter? Guy says, yeah, I need help. Well, Eli has no resources during the day to help somebody who's in active crisis at that moment. And he turns to me, knowing I have a certain amount of knowledge and resources for shelter. He says, Keith, can you help? And I start helping the guy. Hey, Portland Rescue Mission, it's 10 blocks away. They're open right now. You can get a meal. You can get warm. You can watch some CNN. They'll help you move you into their shelter system. Here's your resource. The guy says, okay. And so we point him in that direction to go. Afterwards, I'm interviewing Eli, and I'm like, Eli, what's your resources? Do you got nothing? He says, Keith, I got nothing here. Yeah, we can help. Downtown Clean and Safe has a referral to Bybee Lakes, thank goodness. But an officer, our public safety servant, who is there to serve the community, is under-resourced and overworked. Then we start driving again, pardon me, riding our bike. We ride down into Old Town. There's a fella who's an active psychotic crisis on the side of the street. He's writhing on the street. We pull up to him on our bikes. And he says, hey, fella, you okay? And the guy comes out of it for a moment. Oh, yeah, I'm okay. You know, can I get a smoke? Sorry.
This is all in one night.
This is 30 minutes later.
30 minutes.
Yeah. And so we asked the guy, hey, man, you doing okay? And he's writhing. He's literally on the curb writhing in Old Town. And he stops for a minute, gets a certain moment of clarity, says I'm fine, obviously not. And we ride off, and I'm like, and I pull Eli over, and I said, Eli, do you not have any resources? He says, well, I could call Portland Street Response, but he wasn't hurting himself or others. And I'm like, but imagine what he's providing to our community as far as a shopkeeper there, trying to invite somebody to walk through a small business owner's door to try and be a vibrant, viable, revitalized city, and we have people in active psychosis on the side of the street with no resources.
Won't do it. I represent injured people. I go to them. They don't come here. They can't come here. I don't expect
Kristen,
them to come here.
But I keep telling people that, hey, Portlanders, that's not normal.
Not
normal anywhere.
It's not
and
like
I just
this
I feel like I'm this. I'm not an evangelist. I'm just saying I travel around the nation and the world. This isn't prevalent in Philadelphia. You're not going to see it in Boston. You're not going to see it in Boise. Where?
Maybe Kensington, that neighborhood in Philadelphia.
There is one. They do have some tents.
Very plagued.
They have some tents.
They actually have less tents than we do. It's
absolutely
mostly people in active addiction lying on sidewalks. But
But go downtown Philadelphia. It's beautiful.
Yes, downtown is beautiful.
Right. Yes, I'm not saying that it's perfect everywhere. In Boise, you got some people camping off in the forest or something like that.
It's just like you're saying, most places have an area where you don't go, and everybody knows where that is. That's how it works in living in a big city. The issue in Portland is it's all an area.
We hand out tents here, Kristen.
We're encouraging areas where people can't go.
So so the three things I started with, my three key priorities. We're going to end unshelter homelessness in the first year as your mayor. We're going to address and restore public safety and bring back just a normal public safety system that's fully operational, right? And third is we're going to address our revitalization in our community. So Montgomery Park, 5 years ago, that beautiful building that we had, that we all grew up with.
You know, lit up the words Montgomery Park on it.
It sold
Northwest Portland up above Northwest.
Right. It sold 5 years ago for $250 million, right? Class B office space. I believe it's Class B. I don't want to misstate that.
No, I think you're right.
It sold last month for $50 million.
Right.
Now, think about the taxes on that. Yeah. So generally about every year, a building pays about 1% in property taxes. So 5 years ago, that building had to pay to Portland, to property taxes, $2.5 million to help fund the roads, our public safety, our servants, our fire. Today, because it's reassessed at $50 million, the taxes assessed on that is going to be $500,000. We lost $2 million in taxes to fund our public safety system, our services. Now, times that by hundreds of buildings in Portland that are being resold, going back to the bank. So the way we revitalize our community is we stop the madness. We restore a sense of livability. We revitalize our community because I will tell you, we're still the most beautiful city in the world. We just haven't recognized it in quite a while. You restore livability, end unsheltered homelessness, bring back and restore the confidence and trust in our public safety officials, and I guarantee you, you put out the red carpet, we will be the innovation hub of North America before you know it. So I'll be the biggest cheerleader. So it's two sides of a coin, being mayor. I have to have operational excellence, and I have to also inspire our city. You have to do that in a co-equal sense, and that's where we're going to be. I'll be the biggest salesperson for Portland to bring back not only community members from around our state to start enjoying our city, to not be frightened to come to Portland as the jewel of our state, but then I'll be out across all the other 49 states saying, you can get phenomenal office space with extraordinarily well-trained staff at the ready in the most beautiful city in the world. We're open for business. And so that's how we do it.
What's interesting, Keith, is your other two bullet points of your goals, what you want to accomplish, flow from the first.
Right.
Which I've really never thought about until you said that here today.
Yeah. That's right. You see, it's a natural systems improvement, but you cannot restore public safety until you stop arresting the unsheltered. The only way you stop arresting the unsheltered, you have to end unsheltered homelessness, and it's super low cost to do it. I don't want to try and make cost as an issue.
Honestly,
I want to know it's reasonably
back into that. Because
absolutely.
The last data point I read was a third of our homicides are homeless.
That's
people
right.
As victims and perpetrators.
And think about vehicular homicides. Do you know pedestrian homicides, the largest group is the unsheltered?
Oh,
and
of
our,
course.
And our Vision,
I mean,
Zero is at records. We had more vehicular homicides last year than any single year. And when you think about it, well, we removed our traffic division from our police officers because our police officers are overwhelmed arresting the unsheltered.
Yeah, I was just talking with a friend about that the other day. He's a biker. He was really concerned about that. Yeah.
You see, we just rationalize it. And I don't want to demean the amount of cost there is, but my overall budget to do that.
But we're swimming in money.
We're swimming in money.
It's not like we don't have the money to do it.
Kristen,
we have the money to do it. Sharon Myron says we got the money to do whatever we want.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing ever. She's like, we're actually one of the counties, maybe the only one in the United States where we don't have to worry about money.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You know, we have a $7 billion budget here in Portland. So let's put this into context.
Is that the city budget?
It's the city budget. $7 billion with about 7,000 staff members. So let's put it in context. The budget to end unsheltered homelessness for 1 year, assuming nobody leaves the community, assuming we still need that thousands of beds, it's about $20 million. That's on the high side. The mayor came out a few months ago and said, my overall expenses because of unsheltered homelessness on my budget, it's $300 million. And I keep thinking, okay, if you know that's your cost because of not caring for your community and the cost to care for them is $20 million, do that math. And we have the highest taxes. We do not need any more taxes. If we ran a focused city with efficiency and caring and just ran a systems approach, we can deliver so many revitalized benefits to everybody without having to add more taxes. So you can see we can right-size the city. We can deliver almost all of the hope and aspirations of our community by just rationalizing how we care for our most vulnerable. Isn't that amazing? Care
it
for
is.
Your most vulnerable and you immediately...
As succinctly as that. And yeah. I'll link to the show that you and I were on with Andy Chandler, Northwest Fresh 2, because I thought that was great, a really good conversation. But also, I want to say, Keith, what you've done here today, I feel like your message is getting very tight. Like, the way you've laid this out, I've actually never heard it laid out like this, and it's rather compelling.
Yeah. I'll be sharing a budget with the city here in the next many months. I need my homeless service providers to really dot the I, cross the T, because they're the ones who are going to deliver it, right? Again, I talk to the experts. I'm just simply the leader who will bring those experts together. You know,
need somebody to do it.
Yeah. It's really rational. And it's not. I had one of my mayoral individuals who's running against me say, it can't be done. Homelessness is going to be with us in some form or fashion, or unsheltered homelessness will be this. And I just thought to myself, goodness gracious, how do we inspire our community to change when we're saying that you're just going to have to accept a tragedy of our community? So I just tell your listeners, don't fall prey to any messages that say you can't do it. And at the front of your at the front of our discussion, I told you about some of the extraordinary things that I've accomplished that are first in our nation. So don't stop dreaming. And if you can dream it, you can make it a reality. And that's what Portland's all about. And I want to just your listeners. Hey, everybody, my name is Keith Wilson. I'm running for mayor. My website is keithwilsonformayor.com. And I do want to reference my nonprofit. It's called shelterportland.org. If you want to find the credibility, go to keithwilsonformayor.com. You'll see the history of what I've accomplished. You'll see my priorities of what I'm going to achieve. We talked about what I'm going to do in the first year as mayor because we have to. We cannot do half measures. But if you want to kick a tire and wonder if I have credibility or not in ending unsheltered homelessness, go to www.shelterportland.org and then go and see my leadership council. They are the best in the nation. And look at their resumes. These are not my opinions. I'm an aggregator of great experience. And then look at my board. They're only executive directors. These are the experts of the experts. And then look at the plan. Nighttime emergency shelters at a number in need that we have immediately. Day shelters to connect and help people with linkage. I focus on homeless court program to address a person's headwinds. And then we really start drilling down into Built for Zero and then building quickly, deeply affordable housing to address and help people move from being sheltered into help them becoming housed, because that's the true goal at the end of the day.
Keith, this was really great. Thank you so much. I've never heard this all explained. I mean, really, so it's a lot of complex stuff, but succinctly, especially in one episode. So thank you very much.
Yep. Big questions, big answers. So let's not shortcut Portland anymore.
Keith Wilson, running for mayor of Portland, Oregon. Thank you, Keith.
Right on. Thank you, Kristen.